Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Tuesday, November 3rd edition of the WorldWire NFL Podcast. Week 8 is in the books. I'm Joe Bartle, and alongside me, as always, Jake Litarski. You can follow me at JB Fantasy Sports, Jake at Roto Jake. There's some relatively important things happening today.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL trade deadline is happening. I launched college basketball projections on the website. This is a very important day to be an American and a very important day to be a fantasy football player because, of course, waivers run on Tuesday night, and I'm not sure what else you'd be thinking about, but, you know, we got that going for you.
I think that's the only thing I want to think about today, actually, and I'll be focusing more of my energy than I ever have before. I'm making sure all my free agent priorities are going on as I nervously bite away at my nails as we continue on through today. But, I mean, you talked about this. This actually is very relevant. The trade deadline is today. Mm-hmm. We're recording this podcast at 1:08 Eastern time right now. Yep. So we could potentially miss any trades that happened. I feel like we got a pretty good flurry yesterday, but it was mainly defensive. I think all defensive players that got moved. Of course, crossing fingers that our Packers make some sort of move at the wide receiver end.
I haven't heard too many rumblings about a trade deadline, you know, moves that could really impact fantasy. I don't really believe that. Of course, this is going to get replayed all day, but I don't really believe the Falcons are going to trade Matt Ryan. If the Packers somehow acquire Will Fuller, that's another big rumor. It's not going to make a difference for fantasy because he's universally rostered, right? There might be some fringe guys that get moved a little bit, you know, your Golden Tate type players that seem to go at every single trade deadline. But I don't know. There aren't any situations where, at least in going through this waiver wire outline today, where I'm like, hold up, maybe this could change with the trade deadline. So I guess we'll wait and see a little bit. And of course, catch us both on Twitter. We'll react to that. Any relevant news as it happens. But for now, we're going to run through the waiver wire like it's a normal Tuesday. And I don't expect a ton to change. I guess knock on wood.
Yeah. And we already have a pretty big sizable thing that's going to have to be discussed today regarding the Packers and their COVID-19 situation going on. Before we dive into that and some other free agent pickups, including some streamer quarterbacks that I know we're excited to talk about, let's first get a word from our sponsors, ProSwapBet. Smart sports bettors always know where to find the best odds before placing a bet, and that's why smart bettors usually use PropSwap. You can always find the best odds in PropSwap, and you're buying directly from other bettors like yourself. See a ticket you like but think the price is too high? Submit a bid for the price you think is fair and then buy it. PropSwap sellers are always willing to negotiate, and we all know bookies never will. And for a limited time, our listeners can get up to $500 in bonus cash. Just use the promo code ROTO500. That's promo code ROTO500, and PropSwap will match your first deposit up to $500. Become a smarter sports bettor today. Go to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app.
I'm just processing that now, but that's a pretty brilliant idea. I've actually always thought with my friends, like, man, you know, you always surf through all these lines and all these sports books, and you think maybe you could just put it out there for someone else to bid on. You know, and see if they want to beat the line, and it's like a Tinder for sports bettors. You match people at the line that you're willing to bet on. I don't know. It sounds like an awesome idea to me. I can't wait to try it out.
I'm a cousin Sal Truther. I've listened to his podcast many times, and I think they've discussed if it wasn't PropSwap specifically, other corporations like that. So I agree with you. I think it's been a great idea. We actually, I do the career fair at UW Wisconsin every year. We had somebody who worked in that specific field of the sports betting industry actually come up to me and talk about that idea when his son was working on it. I was like, oh, that's great. I'm not sure what RotoWire can do, but I'm happy that RotoWire is actually partnered with PropSwap, because yes. I agree with you. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Unfortunately, still here in the state of Wisconsin, if you're listening up, you know, legislators, voters out there, you know, still not legal to sports bet in the state of Wisconsin. So we'll have our fingers crossed for a few more years.
Yeah, just waiting our time on that one. So let's talk about the Monday Night Football game. Mm-hmm. Buccaneers did win. That was expected. The fact that it was relatively close and actually should have been a tie game, if you talk about the officiating at all, which was a tremendously bad officiating week all across. And Jeff didn't discuss that enough Monday. The Packers game, the Steelers game, this game, all I thought were directly affected by the Zebras, and that was very frustrating to me as a football fan.
Yeah, to lay this one out, I mean, it was a brilliant 2-point conversion play call. I mean, Daniel Jones had Deion Lewis on the flat. Yes, he threw it a little bit behind him. You know, a good pass towards the pylon gets him the ball. It was kind of a little mini pick play because he had two receivers in the back of the end zone. And I forget who it was, but the linebacker got there a little bit late.
Jamal Dean,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, got there a little bit early. I think he got there a little bit early, but also, you know, the telecast, the officials, it's too much.
Oh, it's a great play. What a great call by the NFL officials that this was right. Oh,
we have the luxury of viewing this on instant replay.
The NFL guy that they beam into also has that luxury and still was like blind as a bat on this call.
Trying to call that in full time, in real time, even if it's right in front of you, man, it could go either way. I was surprised they picked the flag.
That's the part that really pisses me off. And I'm talking about this from a Packers perspective. On the very blatant pass interference of Robert Tonyan, where the flag was thrown. The flag was thrown on a blatant call, and yet you come together and decide, oh, wait, no, this wasn't incredibly egregious and blatant. What is that? Well, when have we transitioned from we're going to challenge every pass interference call to we're going to pick up even the most obvious flags because now we can? Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm happy they're not challenging pass interference calls anymore. That mixed with the less holding calls this year is generally improve the experience, but I don't know. I saw quite a few holding calls last week. Let's get to fantasy, though. We can get into the NFL rule book. I'm glad to happy let you have that rant, but I mean, the main fantasy takeaways from this game on Tampa Bay side, Ronald Jones fumbled early, and Leonard Fournette, who now appears to be healthy, got the bulk of the workload, 15 carries, the 7 for Jones. Ronald Jones got caught all 4 of his targets in the passing game. So that was solid. I mean, Mike Evans played a decent game, second on the team in targets to Jaden Mickens, actually. But, of course, ended up with 5 for 55 in a score. Gronkowski got in the end zone again. Daniel Jones is bad. But
no surprise there.
He might be okay for fantasy. You know, I don't know. Sterling Shepard looks pretty decent. He was tied with Evan Ingram for a team high 10 targets. And then, you know, going down the list, Darius Slayton, who I could have used a little more of, but, you know, wasn't too bad. 9 targets, 5 for 56. Alfred Morris got a surprising amount of carries for someone just getting activated off the practice squad. Of course, as someone who played Wayne Gallman in Stake League, got me enough to win the matchup, so I guess I can't complain too
much. Raises my hand here, too. I actually got the second most points in Stake League because of Wayne Gallman, so thank you.
Yeah, so he helped me out, helped me beat AJ, but I was still shocked every time they gave the ball to Alfred Morris. I guess maybe you don't want to run your guy into the ground, but I don't know. Why not?
I saw way too many tweets from people I respect that are like, I didn't know Alfred Morris was in the NFL. And I know I was a little bit surprised, but maybe it's because I was doing the wire on Saturday. it was pretty evident Alfred Morris was going to be called up to be the backup in this scenario. Mm-hmm. Now, and he's not actionable because we have Devonta Freeman who missed this game. That's the exactly. only reason Wayne Gallman's around. Deion Lewis did score yeah. the very first touchdown for the Giants as well. He's going to be a factor. It's not like you're like picking up Alfred mm-hmm. Morris anywhere.
Yeah,
but this exactly. shouldn't have been a surprise.
Yeah, Alfred Morris had one carry in all of 2019. He's 31 years old, which is a senior citizen in running back years. Yeah, there's no actionable waiver wire here. If there is anything actionable from this game, it might be Sterling Shepard because he definitely fits our rostership threshold at 43%, whatever you want to call it. It was definitely less before the Monday night game, so he's somebody that's kind of on there. And I mean, it's like a 1A, 1B situation with him and Slayton, it seems like.
Yeah, and I think Gallman could be picked up again to start in the event that Freeman misses another game, mm-hmm. and not that you really should have been rostering Freeman much anyway. I talk about a Wayne Gallman manager myself because I have Freeman, and I'm telling you right now, I don't feel comfortable about rostering that backfield, but sometimes in deeper leagues like that, you have to. Mm-hmm. But if Freeman is out there, there's no way I'm playing Gallman, and honestly, the way Gallman has played the last 2 weeks, touchdowns mm-hmm. and back-to-back weeks over, I think over 50 total yards in both of them as well. He's done well enough where maybe he cuts into Freeman's workload too, so it might be a net yeah. loss everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know. In his next three matchups, you know, you've got at Washington, home against Philly, which are both, I guess, the top half against the
decent
run.
Enough.
Decent enough run defense, and then there's a bye week, and then after that he gets the Bengals, so you know there's a matchup there, but
I don't disagree.
See situations where you're holding him through week 12 necessarily, unless you know Freeman comes out, re-injures himself, and you know has to sit the rest of the year.
I don't disagree, but we also would have applied that same thought process to the Buccaneers defense too, and yet he had manageable numbers. So
fair enough.
I mean, over 10 points in each of the last 2 weeks in standard scoring is good enough. I like the Daniel Jones thing's interesting because we have the Bengals, Browns, Rams, Eagles on bye this week, the four teams for week 9 byes. That's at least three starting quarterbacks. Wentz has kind of quietly made himself a pretty much starter in QB1 territory despite his real-life bad performance. Mm-hmm. And you could make a case Mayfield was a starter in a lot of people. We were on this podcast last week saying, start Mayfield. Mm-hmm. We didn't realize there was going to be 30-mile-per-hour winds. But
yeah, well, I mean 50-mile-an-hour winds with the threat of snow. I remember I was doing the inactives for Cleveland that morning. And you know usually I don't have enough time to work out a tweet in between you know getting all the – you know we usually get four teams or whatever. But I was like – hey, watch this video of the winds gusting off Lake Erie, and then maybe think about because I know we had mentioned Derek Carr as a decent streamer on the pod, and I know I had been thinking like I'm going to use Higgins in a DFS lineup. No, not so much after seeing that. And I know sometimes fantasy community in general likes to overreact to weather, but that was one where I saw that and I was like, you know, maybe take a step back here a little bit. It's not the game to stack, we should say.
Well, and the Packers-Vikings was also drastically affected by the weather, too. I mean, there was mm-hmm. very run-heavy approaches by both teams. So I thought this was this week, week 8 overall, was a, hey, you draft analysts who stick your glasses up there and nasally talking about the weather not affecting things. This was a bigger deal. I thought mm-hmm. the weather impacted a lot of different games, but none more so than that. But back to what I was saying with Daniel Jones, three starting quarterbacks at the very minimum, four if you include Baker Mayfield, are out this week. You might have to use Daniel Jones again because while the Washington defense is good, I don't think there's any denying that, there's enough production that Daniel Jones does, despite all the turnovers he also gives you, mm-hmm. where he's at least a low-end quarterback one, I think, for most of the season.
Yeah, he gets a little bit of that Jameis effect from last year like we were talking about. He digs himself in such of a hole that he has to throw himself out of it, and sometimes it works out. He's got some talented wide receivers, so maybe it works out. You know, he had only 26% rostered on the road against the Washington football team. Yeah, I don't mind Daniel Jones as a streamer, but there are a couple more guys that, you know, we like to look at, and starting with the guy who just mentioned, I think Derek Carr, I'm starting to warm up to him a little bit, especially now that he's got Ruggs back, and he's only 42% rostered at the Chargers. I mean, it's a decent defense, but I think the weather conditions will be much more favorable for him, and the game plan will be maybe less centric around Josh Jacobs, who they just basically had to feed the ball to because that's really all they could do.
Yeah, I'm torn on Derek Carr. Again, at 42% rostered in Yahoo leagues, a lot of people seem to have him as a QB2, if not even their QB1 on these starter weeks. So, okay, I mean, that makes sense, and he's gotten plenty of plus yards in matchups that aren't dictated by 50-mile-per-hour winds. But there isn't, like, the deep shots every once in a while to Henry Ruggs. We've seen Nelson Agholor get more involved, wasn't last week, but mm-hmm. In situations that they have to pass more. I think Derek Carr is shaping up to be a fantasy quarterback that needs to be on your radar, but I'm not ever like, oh, yeah, this is a perfect matchup, unless he is facing, I don't know, the Seahawks, for example. And I picked up Jimmy Garoppolo in a league to start him, and he didn't do well, but Nick Mullins did. So there has to be a really favorable defensive situation where I feel comfortable starting Carr, and I'm not sure the Chargers necessarily apply, although Drew Lock did pretty good against the Chargers thanks to a really resurgent second half. So
yeah, and Drew Lock is someone that you have to think about again this week if you're in a streaming situation. He's only 10% rostered, so it's pretty much there's a guarantee that he's out there. He gets a home matchup against Atlanta, and Atlanta, it's like when I think in my brain, I don't know what the exact ranking is, but the two worst secondaries I can think of are Minnesota and Atlanta just because they've been absolutely ravaged by injuries and are on third, fourth stringers for pretty much the last couple weeks here. Atlanta's one of those that, maybe played a little bit better than their baseline, considering whether that affected the Thursday night game as well there. But no, Atlanta's a matchup that you absolutely target. Drew Lock's starting to get healthy. At least his weapons around him are getting healthy, having both Gordon and Lindsay in the backfield. You know, Judy's starting to look a little bit better, had a good game this week. Noah Fant getting back in the mix. So the circumstances seem to be trending upward for a guy like Lock to potentially be worth a start if you have to this week.
Yeah, I'm okay with that too. And in fact, I might even go with Lock over Carr. I think both are pretty close. I think Lock and Carr are pretty similar. And then there's a step below with Tua, Kirk Cousins, and maybe even Nick Mullins in this factor too, assuming he is going to be the starter. We've seen the Niners flip-flop between Mullins and C.J. Beathard throughout this year as the backup.
Exactly.
It seems like it's Mullins this time. Of those three, Tua, Cousins, Mullins, which one do you like the most as your second-tier streamers?
See, I'm not actually – I put Tua on here as an option, but he didn't really blow the fantasy community up by any means. He got the win, which is impressive enough, but their scoring came from a defensive touchdown, a punt return touchdown. Maybe he'll have more opportunities to air it out, but I didn't really necessarily see enough from Tua that makes me want to roll him out there another one. Cousins, I can get behind enough. Having Cook back helps, but it'll be a run-heavy approach. Mullins against the Packers, I mean, they just lost another weapon with Kittle. They don't have Debo.
Any of the running backs.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And all these other guys like Kyle Allen against the Giants. Nope. Sam Darnold against the Patriots. He's going to see ghosts again. Nope. Nick Foles at Tennessee. Absolutely not. Phil Rivers versus Baltimore. Absolutely not. So what am I looking at between Tua, Cousins and Locke?
Tua, Cousins and Mullins.
Tua, Cousins and Mullins. Oh, I guess I'd go Cousins in this one, but it's not by a huge margin here.
Cousins facing the Lions this week. I actually am not ready to write off Tua. I was really high on Tua. I actually thought both Tua and Herbert were going to be really good quarterbacks, and I thought good fantasy quarterbacks. Herbert has certainly proven to be the case, and I think Tua over time is going to be as well. Now, if the Dolphins just take off the kiddie gloves with Tua, then we're going to see it, but we know how these teams like to operate with rookie quarterbacks. It might as well be Tua's very first game, unless you imagine the Dolphins' defense is going to get essentially 28 points in the first half alone, like they did against Rams. Then if that happens, sure, then you're not getting much production. But I do think I feel more comfortable knowing what I saw in the Cardinals' defense 2 weeks ago when they faced the Seahawks and say, yes, Tua can get 200-plus yards and a touchdown or two. I think Preston Williams is good. I think Devontae Parker is good. If Gesicki is involved in any capacity at all, that matters as well.
What a nightmare Gesicki is.
I know. Well, what a nightmare the tight ends 4 through 14 are right now, because with Kittle out now, that hurts the position even more. And we'll get to it. We're going to talk about some of the tight ends to pick up. It's a landmine, and it's really crazy because I thought tight ends was super deep this year. This was the year, if any, that you weren't going to have to invest in any of those guys, and that's been proven to be completely wrong with what we've seen throughout, and I just don't see how that changes. So for me personally, I still have Derek Carr. I have Derek Carr as that topper tier, and then who did we mention before?
Drew Lock?
Yes, Drew Lock. Thank you. Gosh.
So we got Carr and Lock as the top. Then a Cousins.
I think I'm actually going to go with Mullins over Cousins, but I don't know if this game happens on Thursday, and we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get to the running back section.
Exactly.
I don't know what we're getting from the Niners, Packers, and it might be too tough to really project.
Exactly. I put Mullins more in the two quarterback league discussion. We've got a few guys that fit that thing. We'll just name them off. Gardner Minshew seemingly unlikely for week 9 here with that injury they found going into the bye. It seems like they're going to skip over Mike Glennon and give Jake Luton the start here. And Jaguars brass pretty much has made it seem like there's no guarantee Minshew starts again. So that makes things a little bit interesting. They want to see what they got, a.k.a. we're in full tank mode. You know, we're going to try to get Trevor Lawrence to get this situation here. Of course, you've got the Cowboys situation for two quarterback leagues. If you're really hurting for punishment, you know, watch the Andy Dalton, Ben DiNucci situation. But, yeah, all of those guys. And see, that's the category I originally put Mullins in there. It sounds like you think of him a little bit higher.
Definitely. Definitely do. I think the Niners and Packers are going to be competitive whenever that game happens, and it's not going to be just because of the ground game, although I'm very terrified of that as a Packers fan as well. Mm-hmm. And I know all the weapons that the Niners have lost, but I know this scheme that Shanahan runs, and I just have a hard time believing the Packers are going to stop that. They haven't convinced me defensively that they can because of what I've seen over the last 4 or 5 weeks, but really throughout the entire season. Mm-hmm. So I think Nick Mullins can be effective. I think C.J. Beathard, if he was in there, can be effective too. And when I say effective, I'm thinking like 220 yards, a touchdown or so. I was ready to rule out Nick Mullins when he first had a start against the Giants, and I was proved utterly and completely wrong. He had 270-plus yards. He's actually had, I think, that kind of total in most of the games he started as a quarterback for the Niners. I don't see enough in the Packers defense for me to feel comfortable saying the Niners can't do that to anybody else because the Kyle Shanahan scheme is so effective.
It's the scheme and the coaching that can polish something that originally doesn't look so pretty and find a way to make it work and use the best of their ability. And man, if they even make the playoffs, he should be coach of the year this year because I can't think of a team that's been ravaged by injuries that badly.
Much like the Steelers from last year, Mike Tomlin kind of getting them competitive too. I'm right there with you. Mm-hmm. Let's get to the running backs. I think this is actually where the meat of the podcast and most important stuff comes into play. Mm-hmm. We talked about it. I think we have to stress it here now. At the running back position for the Packers, we have a conundrum. And starting first and foremost is the fact that this game is supposed to be and currently is set for to play Thursday night. Mm-hmm. At San Francisco, the Packers had a COVID-19 test positive in the form of A.J. Dillon. He did, of course, play on Sunday. What does that mean for the backfield? Well, we don't know. Right now, it means Jamal Williams is in close contact with A.J. Dillon. Jamal Williams, as a result, will not play Thursday. If this game were to occur Sunday after a litany of tests, maybe it's possible he does go back out there. But as of right now, information we have, Jamal Williams is also out. Okay, does that mean Aaron Jones, who's missed the last two games, is he around enough of the team to be or around those running backs to be available or not? We don't know. We don't even know if Aaron Jones is active and available health-wise for his hamstring injury, I think, right?
Yeah, the most recent news we have on Aaron Jones is still dealing with that calf injury.
Calf, thank you.
A limited participant in Monday's practice. And, of course, the 49ers and Packers are the only teams that actually have to
put out one.
Yeah, put out the injury report. So, yeah, it was a virtual one, and it's called a practice estimate, I guess, that they put out because, yeah, so it's just a unique situation all around here. So will Aaron Jones play? Of course, that he could come be the hero and save this backfield. But what if he can't? What if he's not healthy? And we've seen the Packers exercise extremely conservative approaches with their injuries this year, which I don't mind too much. You know, they did that with Davante Adams. They were in no rush to get him back, and I assume it's going to be the same case with Aaron Jones. So if he's not ready, I would guess if he doesn't somehow log a full practice by Wednesday's walkthrough, or even today on Tuesday, there's a better than not chance that he won't play because – you know, the short week now, give him the extended break afterwards, and then he'll be good to go. Rather than rushing it now, I think him sitting might make more sense. Now, this is just speculative. Now, so then what do we have? The guy that I think of is Dexter Williams getting the call from the practice squad, and depending on your league hosting site, you might not even be able to pick him up because he won't have a team designation, maybe not officially, until he gets that call. We're going to have to see what they want to do. Of course, Tyler Irvin is an example. He's the guy, if you watch Packer games, he's always coming around on the jet sweep, and every once in a while they give the ball to him, so he's technically listed as a wide receiver on our depth chart. He's dealing with a wrist injury, and he was also a limited participant in Monday's practice estimate, or whatever you want to call it. So
here's the part of this that I don't think people understand. The Packers have one running back on their practice squad. They cannot sign another running back and then have him active for the game on Thursday. It by the definition of the COVID-19 rules for the NFL this season, that will not be possible. Mm-hmm. So if Aaron Jones cannot play, Dexter Williams, your fourth-string running back for the Packers and currently on the practice squad, I imagine available in 99.9% of leagues, would be getting 100% of the snaps at the running back position. And I know it's the Niners' defense, and I imagine the Packers will be passing even more under these circumstances. But having any running back get 100% of the snaps is an immediate waiver wire claim kind of deal, like a massive mm-hmm. amount of your budget, even if it's just for 1 week, which is what we would assume. Like this exactly. This is a huge deal. And the fact that we have to do this podcast on Tuesday is unfortunate mm-hmm. because we don't really know the details. Yeah. But this is the information we have right now. And I think Dexter mm-hmm. Williams is going to be a major factor in week 9 football.
All right. So to break it down, yeah, in terms of actionable evidence, you either avoid the situation completely or you wait until waivers have cleared and pick up Dexter Williams for nothing pretty much, right? I don't think you're going to have to compete for Dexter Williams on the waiver wire.
I think you will. I actually do.
Maybe in Wisconsin we will.
Yeah.
But I think in 95% of the leagues across the country, that's going to be a name that – and again, like I said, it's going to depend what your fantasy provider's rules are because he's technically not even on a team yet. So if you have to do Tuesday night waiver bids and he's not quite on the team yet, you might be forced to wait, which I think is probably the sensible way to go anyway. There are some other running backs to potentially discuss that you know, we feel better about their game actually being played.
Well, can I rephrase it? Because I think if your waiver wire is on Tuesday, you have to be like tonight after election results come in, whatever else. I think you have to be picking up Williams, and I would be putting in a 10 to 15% bid. And I'm saying this because I'm saying this because I really do believe Williams is going to have to be the starter. And what am I going to lose if I'm $10 out of $100, whatever? Like mm-hmm. I'm getting 99% of the production at a running back position in the week 9, four teams on bye, so many injuries, whatever else. If I'm not, we do competitive leagues. I'm in the NFFC. That happens Wednesday. Stake league happens Thursday mm-hmm. afternoon, right? Like you have time to wait for that. And if those things are happening, if you are in a league that has a Wednesday or Thursday waiver wire, then it's even higher. So I disagree mm-hmm. with you. I think if I have a chance to get a 100% starting running back for only 10% of my budget, which is what I think would occur right now, I am all for that.
For 1 week, though.
Absolutely for 1 week. That's have you seen the running back position?
Yeah, I mean, not to give away the whole show here, but I'd rather spend double digit on Wilkins. I'd rather do it on Damian Harris. I'd rather do it on Jalen Reagor. I'd rather do it on Jacoby Myers. I'd rather do it than Marvin Jones. I mean, just a sneak preview for what we have coming up here.
So let's get to Wilkins then. Mm-hmm. So because I think that's going to be the one that most people want to talk about. He had 20 carries for 89 yards and a score against the Lions last week. Jonathan Taylor appeared to be benched, but then it was like, oh, wait, no, he has an ankle injury. Mm-hmm. Hines also caught 2 touchdowns. So we have yet again another backfield by committee now in the NFL. Thank you, Colts. We were already seeing that sort of surface. But we don't know, and this is the bigger part of this, if the committee was because of Taylor's injury or ineffectiveness. Because if it's the latter, if it is the ineffectiveness, that's a real issue. And Wilkins would become a prime candidate for, I think, pickups mm-hmm. across the world, but certainly in fantasy leagues. I don't know if it is, though. I think it was more of a byproduct of the injuries that made Wilkins get 20 carries.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely nervous about my Jonathan Taylor shares, but I'm not in complete sell panic mode. Maybe you can lowball some offers to try to get him for cheap or something, but I don't know. Yeah, Wilkins came on in the second half. He played 24 out of 34 snaps. That's 71%. Naheem Hines gets in the mix, but you know, as soon as you pick up Naheem Hines, he's going to go for an 0-4 on you.
Right.
You know, it's just his production is very, very unpredictable here. Yeah, Wilkins becomes probably the top running back option. But again, I don't think there are any number one waiver claim players this week necessarily, unless the news or anything with the trade deadline changes substantially here, you know, while we're recording. I don't think there are any number one guys. Wilkins would be kind of an 8 to 12% of your budget to plug in this week and see what happens. But even if that's your plan, he's got Baltimore this week, the number two run defense in the league. And there's still a committee-like situation here where, you know, even if Taylor's not healthy or Taylor doesn't play or whatever happens, I can't believe they completely shut out Taylor or make him inactive. And then Hines gets a couple of touches. You're playing Baltimore. It's just not a great situation. Schedule after that, Tennessee, Green Bay, Tennessee, Houston,
Bingo.
Las Vegas, Houston. Glorious. So if you believe Wilkins takes that job from Jonathan Taylor the rest of the year, then yeah, go spend 12% of your budget on him and you'll probably get him and you could be happy with that.
I mean, if you think Wilkins is taking the starting job, then you spend 100% of your budget. Because, you laugh at me. Stop that. I'm telling you, weeks 10 through 15, you have the 25th through 31st worst defenses against the running back position in fantasy available for you. He is going to be a running back one starter for you, whether it be Jonathan Taylor or Wilkins, whoever is the guy for the Colts. Mm-hmm. You're putting him out there every week. Every week in that Titans, Packers, Texans, Raiders,
yep.
schedule.
We've got a bye week already behind us, so that works in the favor. And I remember we just launched like a fantasy matchup, a schedule page on rotowire.com. Definitely check out the @rotowire Twitter feed. I believe they've promoted that a couple times this week. And the big takeaway from that new page when I looked at it is Jonathan Taylor, your shiny new buy low, get him piece, because this is glorious. And then, of course, he's not so effective. Maybe it's because of the ankle injury. Maybe because he just doesn't – he didn't look that explosive. But, again, you could write that off on the injury. He's kind of – he seemed like kind of a straightforward runner a little bit. Now, again, I didn't watch this whole game. It was kind of a mix of the red zone, and I was kind of wondering what the heck was happening. But yeah, I don't know. You have to – this is a really tough situation here. I still think Wilkins is the top waiver wire pickup, not because he will take over that job, but because of the chance that he takes over that
job. I mean, he's at 2% rostered right now in Yahoo. It needs to be close to like 40%, 35%. I mean,
Naeem Hines is at 29% because of what happened earlier. Everyone's like, oh, he's the third down back. Here he comes. But yeah, Wilkins would be your guy to own, not because you want to start him this week, but because you're banking on future potential if the circumstances change a bit.
And that's where I go with, I'd rather have Dexter Williams, who I think is going to have to start this week, depending on if the game occurs Thursday. Another name to at least look in your leagues for right now, Damien Harris. He's under 50% owned. He's actually 48 in our Yahoo League, so he technically meets the threshold. Had a pretty good game this past week, but Sony Michel is coming back. He was off the COVID-19 list earlier this week and now appears to be off the injured reserve list as soon as this game occurs next week. So I don't know how – I think Damien Harris is quite clearly the better runner. But I think that the Patriots are going to continue to mangle this thing where you're going to have four different guys out there doing different stuff, and Michelle just factors into it and cuts into a bit of Harris's workload.
Yeah, Damien Harris is one of those cautionary type players that I put on our outline for a very specific reason. I always like to sweep, once I've gone through and identified the top pickups we want to talk about and putting together this show, I always like to just quick sweep every other source, whether that's on our site, on other sites, just to make sure I didn't miss any names that come on here. And I'm seeing Damien Harris placed high in a lot of situations. Yes, he did lead the team with 16 carries compared to 6 for Burkhead and 2 for James White. But his snap share was 31%, whereas Burkhead was 49% and James White is 48%. So you've got the guy that's on the field the third most, the guy that's not really running any routes. He ran 2 routes compared to 12 for James White. And then you've got a guy who plays a similar role, similar type of back, I guess, in Sony Michel coming back. So that's one where, yes, I agree with you that Damien Harris is the best runner, but the committee situation there makes me just lose all interest.
I'd rather have Dexter Williams in that scenario because I know what I'm getting for 1 week. And right now, with the way the fantasy season is going, week by week is probably the best thing. And you're right. We don't know for certain. Again, this is a lot of speculation right now at the Packers game and everything else. But just keep that in mind, again, over a guy like Damien Harris, who I think is going to be splitting the workload. Another name to mention, at least Daryl Henderson left Sunday's game with a thigh injury. So Malcolm Brown is now back to a fantasy relevant name. Potentially Cam Akers is too. Like, what's your read on this? Where are you thinking right now?
This is another tough one because they're going into a bye, right? So very few fantasy managers have the luxury of throwing a $0-$1 bid on Cam Akers and holding him through the bye and hoping he comes through. From what I've seen, the Daryl Henderson injury has been downplayed a little bit. If they were playing this week, I think someone like Malcolm Brown, that is rostered in only 31% of leagues, he might be a play if they were playing this week. But I expect things to be pretty much back to normal in week 10. I don't necessarily anticipate them suddenly deciding to let Cam Akers loose. Cam Akers falls into, I love how Payne phrases this in his articles, the quote, Hail Mary play. If you've got some dead weight on your roster, maybe a kid who's pretty much done for the season and you want to carry somebody but miss all the fab bids, pick up a guy like that and hope for the best. But, he's also going to be first on the chopping block when tough decisions need to be made.
I'm right there with you. Probably the last name of the running backs that we need to consider is Tremaine Pope. And this leads into we always try to ask which players we dropping right now. I'm dropping Joshua Kelly. And it isn't even so much that Kelly was out-snapped, I think, and out-carried. Pope had 10 carries to Kelly's 7. I think Pope had 26 snaps to Kelly's 21. And Pope also had 5 catches for 28 yards, too. So he just outproduced Kelly in every single facet. Now, Justin Jackson was still around. Justin Jackson was the best runner for the Chargers on Sunday in that loss to the Broncos. But I don't think we need to go ahead and aggressively get Pope. Now, he's rostered in exactly 0% of Yahoo leagues right now, so you can get him if you want him. I'm like, even in NFFC leagues, which are 12 teams, 10 player benches, I still don't think I'm going to go ahead and put a bid on Pope. And the reason for this is because the Chargers are going to go with the hot hand every single week. Pope was called up from the practice squad the previous 2 weeks and now has signed a contract, so that's already passed through. Austin Eckler isn't we don't know yet when he's going to return.
Yeah, so I'm looking at our last update on Austin Eckler. It's October 21st. It says he'll be back later rather than sooner. So I'm going to have to find that that Chargers beat writer and poke him for an update or something. But I don't think there is any update necessarily. No. I mean, we'll see. The only thing that takes me back from Pope would be the possibility of Eckler coming back and the role. From what I saw from that game, there was only three games on the late red zone, so I saw a lot more of that Chargers game than normal. From what I saw is he was running those Eckler-type routes. And once Eckler comes back, there is no role for him. So it's very short-term. Short-term, slight upside PPR, flex play if you need to, if you're getting hurt by byes or injuries. That's how I view Pope.
I think you have the way you have to think about this, and we were saying this from the beginning, or at least I was when Eckler got hurt. Once Eckler returns, Justin Jackson, or in this case now Tremaine Pope's value – is completely shot because the Kelly role is going to be the Kelly role, just like the Melvin Gordon role from previous years was always going to be the Melvin Gordon role. But they've done Justin Jackson stuff now and kind of combined both Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler roles into one, which is good because Justin Jackson has been the more productive player throughout his portion as the starter-esque role. But I think Tremaine Pope is going to do enough stuff as the change of pace guy, much in the way that we've seen Austin Eckler do change of pace stuff too. So I don't want people to overreact and see, oh man, he got 60 plus yards and five receptions. I got to go pick him up. He's the new Austin Eckler. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work that way with the Chargers offense, much in the same way Justin Jackson isn't going to be the new Austin Eckler. Nobody can be Austin Eckler. And unfortunately, Kelly can't be Melvin Gordon either, which is why I'm dropping Kelly, but I'm not going out and getting Pope in that instance either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I'm not going to be able to break this down any better than the Chargers expert, the resident Chargers expert here. So, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, he's a low-cost, low-end flex play in deep leagues that can help you in the short term, and that's really all I view of that. I might throw him in with some $0 backup bids to some other guys, but I'm not really all that interested. There are very few situations thinking across my leagues right now where he'd be a viable starter for me.
All right, let's get to some of the wide receivers. But before we do that, I want to get a word from our sponsors, BetMGM. Football is in full swing, and the new customers at BetMGM Sports can kick the season off, or continue the season, I should say, with a 100% deposit match up to $500. Simply sign up and make a deposit with the bonus code RotoWire to take advantage of this offer. There's never been a better time to get in on the action at BetMGM with parlay bonus payouts, live betting, daily boosted odds specials, and much more. Don't let 1 minute of the NFL season pass by. Download the BetMGM app today or go to BetMGM.com and use bonus code RotoWire to double your betting bankroll with a 100 deposit match up to $500. Of course, must be 21 years or older and physically located in Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, or West Virginia. Please gamble responsibly. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada, 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia, or 1-800-9-WITHIT in Indiana. Promotional offer is not available in Nevada. All right, so moving over to the wide receivers, we had talked about Brandon Ayuk. He, of course, went off and destroyed me in a couple different leagues. Rashad Higgins did not do anything thanks to the 100 million mile per hour wins going on. Jalen Reagor did have a pretty good performance and should have had really two touchdowns. I thought it was more of a drop with that deep pass by Wentz towards the end of the game. Corey Davis was just under our threshold last week. He also performed really well. Scotty Miller and Nelson Agholor less so. The biggest injury of really, I think, Sunday's slate, and maybe you could think of somebody else, but Kenny Galladay is out for week 9 and could be even longer for that with an injury and left without even getting a catch. Marvin Jones ended up being a factor, but Marvin Hall also was a guy, 7 catches for 113 yards. He becomes an option in deeper leagues. TJ Hockenson is going to be more involved in the passing game. I'm going to be really interested to see how this goes. Like, almost to the point where I wonder if Marvin Jones should be a sneaky trade target for people, because I just don't see the Lions not passing the ball. I mean, they're going to need to pass the ball often. But I don't know if I really need to give up a lot to get a Marvin Jones or a Marvin Hall, who's available in just about every league right now.
Yeah, I like Marvin Jones as probably one of the top pickups this week. I'd say maybe top three in the wide receiver department because I love Reagor. I think he's the guy. But Marvin Jones is absolutely a player worth adding to your team. He is a guy that always finds his way into my Thanksgiving DFS lineups.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm pretty sure he's going to again this year. He always does, you know, just in the showdown or whatever I'm playing on Thanksgiving Day. He's going to be a guy that you have to check out. I mean, his yards per target is right now through 7 games. It's his lowest since his rookie season. So maybe that's a little bit concerning, but it shouldn't matter here because he's going to get the targets with Galladay out. I mean, Danny Amendola, Marvin Hall, even TJ Hockenson will get a little bit, but I think Jones becomes the clear guy, and maybe not necessarily the guy that has to get all the coverage necessarily. They can spread the love a little bit, because I don't necessarily think that the level of skill, you know, between Jones and Amendola or Hall is that crazy that you have to devote to double covering Marvin Jones all the time. I think he becomes one of the top waiver pickups this week. I'm thinking like a 6-8% bid, maybe a little more if you definitely need a short-term wide receiver if you're hurting here. But there are basically several guys that you kind of make that 6-10% bid I'm thinking on. And then, you know, I'd be good with a lot of them.
I mean, Jalen Reagor is the highest one of the wide receivers, and I think he's even over my beloved Dexter Williams, evidently, since you are so low on Williams. But I think Reagor is the top pickup. He's available in 24, or he's only rostered in 24% of the leagues, which, again, just makes me cry because it tells me that nobody was playing in the injured reserve leagues that we tried to stress early in the year.
Exactly.
But Reagor has to be number one pickup. I'm certainly looking at Marvin Jones, who's just under that threshold at 49% rostered. I don't know if I want Marvin Hall more than Jacoby Myers, who had 10 targets, and Julian Edelman is on IR and likely not going to be back for a while. He caught 6 for 58. Not that the Patriots offense always has to have a Julian Edelman to be effective, but there always seems like there is that guy. And in a PPR perspective, which was really great for me in Stake League, I had to kind of roster Myers by default. You can do a lot worse, and I think I'd rather have Myers in that extent than Hall. I don't think Hall is going to have that type of target share relative to what Myers will, although he did this week. So
yeah, Hall ended up with 7 targets this week, caught 4 of them for 113 yards. I'm not necessarily sure I'm trying to chase that necessarily, and I agree with you that Jacoby Myers, the 10 targets, volume is king. He's next up. You can say what you want about Cam Newton this year so far, but they got to throw to somebody, and I think Myers is the guy. I put Myers right up in there in that same tier with Marvin Jones and Jalen Reagor.
Reagor.
You know, I'm going to say it. I'm going to flip-flop. I said it right the first time, but then I messed it up. But no, I like Reagor the best because, yeah, it was only a 73% snap share this week where Folgum got 93.7 and Greg Ward got 93.7. But they never were really truly threatened and had to go crazy passing the ball necessarily.
Well, that's exactly it. I'm happy that he had 73%. Mm-hmm. I thought Eagles are going to take it slow. Yeah. Reagor was hurt. He's coming off the injury. And maybe it's just I'm the Packers fan, and I've seen this story time and again. All right, 4% of the snaps, great. Then next week he goes off. To get him involved that frequently, and it was a nice little touchdown too, but again, the deep pass that Wentz had to look at him at that spot, and again, Reagor dropped it, but that was a really comforting look. He's going to be a guy
if you're
for the rest of the year.
If you're measuring air yards, absolutely. You know, that's one of those things that should pop up in that situation here. I actually put Greg Ward on the drop list this week. I mean, I know he was on the field quite a bit here, but one, the problem with the Eagles or picking up Reagor is the bye week. The bye week is tough. That's coming right
now.
And Alshon Jeffrey as well. Alshon Jeffrey is a guy that I could see if he somehow is able to pass a physical, they trade for like a conditional 7th rounder or something. I don't really see. At this point, I'm not necessarily sure Alshon Jeffrey is going to come in and make an impact here. I think Reagor cuts into the...
I just think Jeffrey cuts into Ward's value to the point where Ward probably is droppable, but there isn't anybody that cuts into Rager's role. And right now, the way Travis Fulgham is playing, you can't stop him either. And it's ironic, given how the Packers have struggled at wide receiver and now the Lions with their injuries. Those were the previous two practice squad spots for Fulgham, and now Fulgham is here and doing things with the Eagles. So it's crazy to think about. Is it fair to move on to the Niners pass catchers?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we can agree that it's the 1-2-3 in whatever order you like. Reagor, Marvin Jones, Jacoby Myers. I think Reagor is the pickup, but of course it changes if you need somebody to start this week immediately.
Yeah.
Before we move on to that one, I just want to say Corey Davis, 47% rostered. Go out there and fix that.
So Corey Davis or like Marvin Jones, they both are just under 50%. Where are you at with that?
I'd take Davis.
See, I'll take Jones, actually, because I think he's going to be a bigger factor. And I still believe A.J. Brown, for the limited times that the Titans pass, is going to be always the featured guy.
Don't get me wrong. I love A.J. Brown. He should be the featured guy. He should be the guy also warranting a lot of coverage. And I think Corey Davis, in his contract year, is going to have a few more big games. So I would take him. I think the utility for Corey Davis maybe lasts a little bit longer than the utility.
I took Corey Davis in our staff dynasty league, and it was by no means a, you know, saying he's going to be good. It was just like, whatever, the 12th round pick.
He's here. I've heard of him.
Worked out pretty well so far for me this season. I've had to start him due to injuries in a lot of places. Okay, so Anthony Miller had 11 targets for the Bears perspective. I go to Kendrick Bourne. Everyone was stacking the Niners passing attack against the Seahawks, and that kind of worked after Mullins came in. It was all junk time production towards the end. Ayuk as well was a factor. I'm not super excited to have Anthony Miller just because I want no bit of Nick Foles or Trubisky passing in the ball other than Allen Robinson. But I am a little bit intrigued by Kendrick Bourne just because of the Packers matchup, whether it occurs Thursday or Sunday. I really believe Mullins is going to do okay enough as a passer because he's going to have that running game to fall back on and use as a weapon. And Kendrick Bourne is kind of the last man standing right now for the pass catchers for the 49ers.
Yeah, when there's a decent name that's 21% rostered and who gets 11 targets, they get a spot on my list, a bullet point on my list, but definitely I don't believe in the consistency in terms of usage among Anthony Miller for the rest of the season to put him above any of the previous guys we've talked about. Yes, I like Kendrick Bourne. He always happens to sneak his way in here. And Ayuk, if this game is played on Thursday, I imagine Ayuk will get the Jair Alexander coverage. And Kendrick Bourne, you know, will get, I don't know. I don't know if Kevin King
the non-Kevin King, yeah.
or I don't know if Kevin King will be, or, you know, whatever's left after that. So, you know, Bourne could have a decent game, but I imagine Shanahan's going to try to cut him up with the run like most teams have been able to. And again, that's if this game does in fact get played here. So, you know, if you don't necessarily like Bourne on the short week, given the situation, how much of a long-term value do you place on that? Maybe not a lot, but you know, you have to look at that depth chart every week. There are going to be some Kittle targets up for grabs too, so that could only help the whole Ayuk Bourne situation. I believe they both got double-digit targets this week, if I'm seeing this correctly. So,
yeah.
Both these guys are going to be plenty viable, but you know, you're going to have to take your lumps on a couple places and hope for the best in others.
You have written down Hollywood Brown as maybe a drop for people, and I guess this would be in 10-team leagues, right? Because anything lower than that, I can't imagine you're down for it. But it's interesting. I mean, he had two targets down against the Steelers. He did catch a touchdown pass, which matters a little bit. He was throwing a bit of a hissy fit on Twitter or social media as well.
Yeah, that was part of it. I just kind of wanted to have a conversation. Like, how are you treating Hollywood Brown? Because it's total fantasy purgatory right now. You absolutely can't put him in your starting lineup. You can't. It's really tough to outright drop him. I could see doing it in a 10-teamer if you have to, but I don't know when Miles Boykin's getting the touchdowns, and we both like Duvernay and what he can bring to the table here. And this is a team that's going to have the highest run split in favor of the run over the pass out of any team in the league. You know, last year it was Vikings and Ravens, and this year it's, you know, pretty much the same situation here. So you've got that split. Yeah, I don't know. It's really difficult. And then you have him vocally complaining on social media right before the trade deadline here. I could just see that going bad. So I wanted to have a conversation.
They're not going to trade him. I'm not worried about that.
No.
And I actually have to start him this week in a different league, mainly due to bye weeks. You're drafting Marquise Brown and you're relying on Marquise Brown, hoping he has more of a Will Fuller floor that we've seen this season, right? Like, I mean, the same type of players.
Well, I mean,
but you're
the
hoping
floor that's zero, right? But the ceiling is outrageous.
No, I mean, like, Will Fuller was drafted fairly high this year because you were assuming he was going to get some of the DeAndre Hopkins targets. So therefore, like, 4 for 40 games were the floor that you're hoping for, and I think that's the same floor that you thought Marquise Brown was going to have. That I think you can safely say is gone. There will be no type of floor for that, but the ceiling is still there for Marquise Brown. The average depth of target is still up there in terms of the Ravens offense. And if Lamar Jackson gets it right, and I don't know what's happening right now, I've been a Lamar Jackson truther, I'm going to stay a Lamar Jackson truther. If he gets it right, Marquise Brown's ceiling is higher than just about any wide receiver in the league. So I can't drop that.
Yeah, I mean, in case you missed the game of the week, he did score a touchdown. You know, so sometimes, I don't know, drops are one of the hardest part of the shows to generate ahead of time. And sometimes I'll just toss someone on there who will make some fun.
It's all right. I like it spicy. That's fine. I'm totally okay with that. Let's move over to the tight ends. Unfortunately, not a huge group of them. We had Dallas Goedert return from IR. He is rostered in 62% of the leagues right now. Evidently, people are using their IR spots on Goddard and not other players. I don't know why. But he didn't do a whole lot. I think that's going to happen over time. The Eagles have a bye week this week. No, wait. I think they have a bye week this week.
So you're not going to be able to use that.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's fine. Like, that's probably why he wasn't used. And at least that's what I wrote about on Saturday. And then you have, I think the Niners situation is probably the one to monitor the most. Ross Dwelly is my pickup this week at tight end. But I think long term, Jordan Reed probably is. Now, it sounds like Kyle Shanahan was saying Reed's close. They're going to be considering whether he can play this week against the Packers or not. If that game happens Thursday, I have to imagine Reed doesn't play. If the game gets postponed until later, maybe there's a better chance for Reed to play out of that instance.
I just had some really bad deja vu having, because I've had this conversation about Jordan Reed at least 100 times in my life, many of the times sitting in this exact same chair. He's made of glass and you can't really count on him. I know some of the stuff's outside of his control, the concussions. You know, I feel for the guy because that'll probably have an effect, you know, lasting into his life after football. But man, picking someone like that up, yeah, it's so hard with our jobs sometimes. We have to think of these players as stocks and yeah, not people. And in this case, this is not a stock I want to buy necessarily. Yes, he's got the name and he's definitely got the athletic ability, but how long can you really count on it for? So that's the tough part.
Yeah, and Reed was productive in the short stints with Kittle out earlier this season, and then, of course, he got hurt. So that's where I think we've seen it on the field this year, which is good. That reinforces the idea that Reed, when he's healthy, is a pickup and needs to be rostered and, quite frankly, should be started against the Packers if he's able to go. I just don't think if the game occurs Thursday, he will be able to. So therefore, mm-hmm, Ross Dwelley becomes the guy. Dwelley has also been productive in the limited times Kittle has been out, and Reed has been out too. So that's kind of an intriguing name for me to monitor. We talked about Harrison Bryant for the tight end for the Browns right now.
Yep. Like, so this is a tough situation because he got the start on, yep, Sunday. Of course, the conditions were not favorable for any kind of passing. I mean, he was right up there in terms of the pecking order for targets. But so I would say, obviously, he would rank for me ahead of someone like Njoku if they don't manage to ship Njoku before today's trade deadline. But then I saw the report that Hooper's probably on his way back here. And I know we had the whole appendix conversation last week, you know, 2 weeks off even. You know, that's a stretch. But, you know, with the NFL-level painkillers, I'm sure they can figure, yeah, it out. And when Hooper comes back, then
so, you know, so my thought is that Brian. Hooper still ends up being – I think you almost use Hooper exclusively as a blocker. I'm just thinking of trying to get tackled right now in that situation after 2 weeks having your appendix removed. It's just going to be –
him as a blocker isn't much better. I mean, you get hit on every play.
Fine. I'm saying, but like literally getting tackled in the sweet spot necessarily to where you had the surgery is a little bit different. So I still think Bryant's going to get the snaps, and we've seen Bryant get snaps over Njoku when Hooper was healthy, like completely healthy. So Bryant still has fantasy value to me, but it's disappointing that really in the 1 week that he had the chance to jump out, we had wind conditions that just wouldn't allow it. I don't exactly think it's anything due to talent. So pretty limited when it comes to the tight ends. I don't know of any like super obvious tight end drop names. Mm-hmm. I've thought about Jimmy Graham a little bit. He's had 7 targets, of course, this past week. But they keep talking about Cole Kmet.
Didn't Cole Kmet have a bad turnover? Or did I remember that wrong?
He only had a few targets. But it just feels like the Cole Kmet thing is going to happen sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it should, because they invested a second round pick in him. You might as well see what you have. But I just wonder if like Jimmy Graham is getting close to the droppable point for me, given how much they really keep discussing Kmet.
I don't know why I had that in my head with the bad turnover, but Cole Kmet has, yeah, he's had a couple okay games here, but he has yet to be targeted more than twice in a game this season, and he's had 0 targets in several games. He played the most snaps of the season, week 8, with 30. I don't know if I'm ready to make that switch yet. I think
Graham's had at least 6 targets in each of the last 3 weeks. If you go back to week 3, he's actually had at least 5 in every one of those games. He's been targeted quite frequently in the offense, and he's much like every tight end in that 4-14 range, where you just have to hope for things to work out their way. The schedule doesn't necessarily say it's going to be good or bad, I think, for him rest of the season. They just keep talking about Cole Kmet. I see every time on social media, Cole Kmet, and I haven't really seen it on the field, but they are very clearly trying to push him to be something.
If there's one Bears pass catcher I'm going to go over with, and we didn't hit him in the wide receivers, but you maybe think about Darnell Mooney is who I'd be going after, because the next 2 weeks, Titans are 29th against opposing wide receivers, Vikings are 31st against opposing wide receivers, and then you've got a week 11 bye here. So if you need someone to be like your real Hail Mary play over the next couple weeks, and maybe flex a guy like Mooney instead. But, you know, again, I wouldn't feel super great about that.
That's definitely a deeper league one, too. I agree with you. He's actually rostered in Stake League. I know Shanky had to start him. I don't know about this week, but the week before, and wasn't much success.
A lot of people had to make some last-minute pickups because the receiver landscape was weird. I remember I had a choice between Kendrick Bourne and Denzel Mims, and I ended up picking up Mims because of more – you know, longevity up. So yeah, maybe get something exciting, and mostly because I had Crowder, so it was kind of a direct replacement there. But I'm not sure if I made the right call. Time will tell.
I think there's actually some pretty high fantasy utility when it comes to defensive streaming options this week. Just like the ones off the top of my head here, Titans versus the Bears, right? Trubisky, Foles, awful. You have the football team against the Giants. Danny Dimes got to turn the ball over every time he can. And you now have the Texans, I think, are a very viable option when it comes against this new starter for Jacksonville, whether it be Lutton or Glennon if he gets put in there at some point. I think you could even make a case the Giants could start against the Washington team right now, too, with how inopportune Kyle Allen is in his starting spot. I think there's a lot of interesting options. You could even talk me into the Cardinals against Tua if you said Tua was just going to play like he did last week.
I didn't put the over-unders down on the sheet this week, but if I had to guess, the Titans in Chicago would be kind of on the lower end there, and the Titans are the home team. You know, they've taken a little bit of a beating lately here. I think maybe Vrabel will work those guys up, and again, you're going against bad quarterbacks no matter which way you cut it. So Titans, they're 48% rostered. I think they got to be the number one play. And then, see, I do like the Texans at 4% at Jacksonville. You know, you could take your pick out of that football team versus the Giants game. That game's going to be ugly any way you cut it. But the Texans, you know, they still get, unless they ship J.J. Watt before this thing's over or blow that whole thing up, which we don't know. I mean, they've got enough firepower to get some sacks and cause some turnovers. Yeah, they've been giving up a lot of points, but I think they're big, something that's not necessarily always measured perfectly with defenses, but I think their chances of creating big plays or points in general is better than some of these other teams because, you know, they do have a little bit of talent there. And, Yeah, it's tough.
I'll go one step further. I actually like the Texans defense over the Titans. I think to me the Washington football team is the top pick against the guaranteed two turnovers from Danny Dimes. And then I think whoever starts for Jacksonville is going to be bad enough where the Texans defense can take advantage. Now I get a little bit wary when a team has a bye week to prepare for their opponent and puts in a new quarterback. It's the same reason why I was on the Dolphins to cover the spread this past week, because you have 2 weeks to prepare to make your rookie quarterback, or in this case, Mike Glennon, if you were to start, a viable option. But I just don't think there's any talent there, and maybe it involves incorporating DJ Chark more, DJ Chark with his injury history. He's kind of sheds that hopefully with the bye week. You have to really
talk
me
out of the jigs this week. You know, that's I saw the Viscus Chenault come up on some waiver wire list this week, and I'm like, where is it Viscus season again with Jake Lutton as quarterback? I mean, what the heck? You know, who knows?
There's too much narrative stuff that I have to talk myself into for the Jacksonville offense to be effective other than James Robinson. So that's why I'm fine saying Texans as a pretty high pickup. Besides the Washington team, I think they're my number two defense this week.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yeah, I can buy that for you. After watching that Monday Night Football game and saying out loud to myself, he's so bad in reference to Daniel Jones, I can buy the Washington football team this week. And so there are three good options. You know, you place those guys and chances are you're going to get one, because I don't think, you know, going back to the bye weeks this week, I mean, people weren't really streaming the Bengals, Browns, maybe the Rams. I had the Rams in one league and I had the Eagles, but mostly because they were playing the Cowboys last week. So, chances are, you know, again, this is a week where looking at the buys, you're probably going with the one that you drafted or that you have been starting, but there are three perfectly quality options. Last week was bare and horrible for defense.
It was
this
tough.
This week, definitely better. You could have some action here, so definitely check that out. Check out Jerry's streaming defenses. He ranks them, you know, for this week, for the next 3 weeks, and for the rest of the season. Great article on rotowire.com. Definitely worth your time here if you are like me and like to regularly stream defenses.
Yeah. Please rate and review the podcast. I mean, we haven't really talked about much at the end of the broadcast, but it definitely does good things for us in terms of the company and for Jake and Joe and myself. I had to go third person there. Personally, it helps us out a lot, too. And again, you can follow us at JB Fantasy Sports for me, Joe, and then at Roto Jake for Jake to have any questions. But we're always available on Twitter if you have anything, and we do the best we can. So until next week, make sure you go out and vote and stay safe, everyone.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.